Welcome back to Marvel Good Yay, the podcast that is a spinoff of the Geekeasy podcast, where we're going back to watch all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe films leading up to Avengers Endgame. I am Pixel Dan.
Jonathan Leonard.
Jaron McCaffrey.
And today, we are going back to check out the final movie of Phase 2.
That's right. Much to Jaron's chagrin.
We're watching Ant-Man.
Why is that my chagrin?
Oh, you keep complaining about the Avengers not being the... Complaining's probably not the right word.
I just wanted to make fun of you. Leave me alone.
It's dumb, man. Why is Ant-Man...
Epilogues, bro. Yeah, epilogues.
Yeah,
it's not.
It does.
It's just a weird, arbitrary phasing.
Yeah, it is kind of weird when you think about it, too, the way it kind of perfectly bridges into Civil War. It almost doesn't really feel like it should have been the end of Phase 2.
As much as anything, I think it's marketing of, like, aftermarket, like the DVDs and stuff like that. Because this movie came out shortly after Age of Ultron, and then there was the long gap until the following May.
I see what you mean.
That way they could come out and the DVDs could come out. They could package them as a phase. They could do whatever.
Okay, that just, could be it.
From a scheduling perspective, it made perfect sense. It just feels awkward from the movie perspective.
Marketing. All right.
Thank you, Jonathan Business.
Which way to business? All right, Jonathan Business, what's the stats for
okay,
this movie?
Speaking of numbers. All right, we had a $130 million production budget, leading us to $180 million domestic returns, $339 foreign returns, for a grand total of $519
million for Ant-Man. Wow. Not a bad haul at all. Not some of the Marvel numbers you're used to seeing, but this was also the weird epilogue, the Paul Rudd featuring, you know, which, I mean, Paul Rudd can carry a movie for sure, but most of them are smaller comedies.
Right.
Which is kind of what this is. Marvel Cinematic Universe's smaller comedy, you know? But definitely a financial success by any stretch of the imagination.
Wasn't there a little bit of drama going into this one, too, with Edgar Wright or something?
There was a ton of drama.
Okay, all right.
This movie started production, I think, maybe before Iron Man did. Or at least right around that time. But I really think it was like early, mid-aughts, and Edgar Wright was on board, the guy who did Shaun of the Dead and all those wonderful movies. And he had a real passion for Ant-Man and really wanted to make an Ant-Man movie and got into pitching his idea. It was accepted, got into a lot of the scripting stuff, kept getting delayed. Then the machine really starts working and starts moving, and now all of a sudden it's a little more difficult to just go and make a Marvel property into a movie. You have to make it into the universe now. And I don't know exactly what his vision was. I think a lot of it carried over, but not fully by any means. So whatever he had in mind either didn't mesh well with what they wanted to do as far as building it into a larger universe, or he just really didn't want to work as a cog in the machine. It's very possible. You know, the style of movies he makes and the style of work he does, he's not a big studio director or anything like that. He calls his own shots. He plays things on the fly. He may have just, you know, when he picked his passion for Ant-Man, it may have been, well, this is a fringe enough character, I'll be able to do whatever I want with it. And when he couldn't do whatever he wanted with it anymore, it just sort of led to not working out, basically. But, I mean, that it didn't not work out until after the movie was a ways into process. I think most of the casting had been done. I think a lot of the pre-production had been done with him on board still. This was going forward full steam, and then all of a sudden he was just out. Creative differences, or whatever the Hollywood version of that is.
Best of luck in the future.
I said that creative differences is the Hollywood version of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Future endeavors is what I said in my brain. And so then it was a race to find somebody to step in. And a lot of names were kicked around. I know Adam McKay was a big one who I believe did some script work on it. Paul Rudd reworked a lot of the script. I think it was him and McKay basically redid the script, trying to keep as much of the Edgar Wright flair as they could, because that was the movie they had signed on for. It was one of those deals where there was a lot of chagrin because people had signed on to do this movie under these circumstances with this person, and then all of a sudden a lot of that's changing around. But being that they're professionals under contract and like money.
So upset.
Yeah. Well, you know, granted, none of those guys were out there threatening to quit the product or anything like that. Yeah. It's just kind of one of those. There's always a weird air. We've seen that a few times in recent history.
So you're saying they're no Chris Pratt and Batista?
Yeah, exactly. We've seen that on the reverse side a little bit, though, too. Like, I remember when Lord and Miller were fired off of that Han Solo movie. I think everybody who worked on it was pretty happy. So it can go either way. And it doesn't necessarily reflect anybody involved. I don't think Marvel hates Edgar Wright. I don't know that Edgar Wright hates Marvel. I don't know any of these people personally. Yeah, no. So who knows or cares at this point?
Yeah.
The point is, we had Peyton Reed step in, take over the franchise, make a pretty darn entertaining movie, and a pretty decent sequel to boot afterwards. So we're on good ground now.
Yeah.
But there was definitely a roller coaster getting there on this one.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, where do we want to start at with this?
I don't know.
You don't know?
At the beginning.
I mean, I got notes.
You got notes.
We don't have to go by my notes.
Okay. Right off the bat, we start off with, when did they start doing the de-aging? Was this one of the first ones they had done?
I feel like this was one of the first ones, right?
Yeah, I feel like it too, because I just remember when young Michael Douglas walked on the screen, I just went, whoa.
Yeah.
I feel weird right now.
Yeah.
That's my first note is, man, how good is the de-aging?
It is really good, and I feel like they've only gotten better at it, too, at this point. Because there were a few shots where you could tell it was a little CG-ish, and it looked a little strange. But, man, I was thinking about, like, we just saw, like, Sam Jackson and Captain Marvel, and how good did that look?
Yeah.
The whole movie? Like, it was unbelievable. So they've definitely gotten better at the process.
I feel like there was a couple of parts in this is not a Captain Marvel podcast by any means, but there were a couple of parts where Sam Jackson was in an action scene where he looked like a 70-year-old Sam Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the action scene. But other than that, like, the actual, like, CG of it's great. And I believe it started here. This is the first time I can really remember seeing anything of substance there. And it wasn't like a quick shot.
Right.
That was what impressed me so much at the time. I mean, it's not a huge chunk of the movie, but it's a whole scene.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, the first time I remember really seeing it was Tron Legacy. They did it with
Jeff Bridges. Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Yep.
They did it with Jeff Bridges.
For the whole movie there.
Yeah, but
as far as Marvel goes.
I was going to say.
But this was this was a pretty neat scene, though, here at the beginning, because we got to meet Hank Pym. Who's like, he's the original Ant-Man. And that's worth noting, I think, for these movies, is they decided not to go with Hank Pym as, like, modern-day Ant-Man.
Yep.
So he apparently had been running around as Ant-Man way prior to all the current superhero shenanigans.
Do we know, is there a reason for that?
Why they went with somebody else?
Yeah.
Or what?
I mean,
I don't know of a specific one. I mean, I don't know if it's just the idea they had or what. I like the way they work him into the narrative.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a bit. Yeah, it's a good story.
Yeah, exactly.
I really like that it creates the idea that it wasn't like Captain America than Iron Man. You know, there has been this creates the idea that there could have been superheroes all the way along,
yes,
whether or not we knew about them.
Yep.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Which also I kind of was thinking about. I think this is one of my notes, but I'll talk about it now. Kind of puts it makes Iron Man matter a little more, you know, in that, you know, if we had superheroes all along and they just kept it quiet, you know, that changes the whole world when Tony Stark goes,
I am Iron Man.
Yep.
Yeah, totally.
Yep, for sure.
Well, and they make references to that in this movie, too. He was like the legend of the Ant-Man or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, and he never confirms that it was a real thing.
Yep.
Yeah, so like it was totally like a secret thing.
Right.
I always wonder how much the general public had to know about Captain America. But I wonder how much that permeates the, you know, pop culture or whatever of this world.
Yeah.
He was running around selling war bonds.
Right.
He was a guy they knew about. But at the same time, I don't know if they told everybody he was selling war bonds to. He could have just been a guy in a costume to them.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, well, there's the whole Smithsonian exhibit on him. So they have some, you know, some.
Yeah, and I guess
they
did all those movies and stuff,
right,
too, about that kind of thing. So.
Yeah. You know, but it's the same thing, you know, like, we know who General Patton is.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? Like, what do we really, who really, you know, how many kids are going to know who General Patton is? And what do we really know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's that movie. But so, you know, I see him in that same way by the time we get to nowadays.
Yeah. I just in the superhero folklore of the world, because it all kind of starts with Iron Man bringing everyone out into the fold, but then, like you said, we don't know how many there were in between.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That we just never saw or heard about. So.
Well, now we know that there's been a couple, right? Because Captain Marvel was floating around too back then, back in the 80s or the 90s. So that's, and I like we get some Peggy Carter here.
Yes, always great.
And we get Howard Stark, which is great because this is older Howard Stark that we saw like in the videos to Tony and John Slattery. Iron Man 2. Yeah, so that was kind of cool to see like all this stuff and some of the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff going on during that time. And also who's the guy's name, who's obviously becomes a Hydra guy, the one that wants Pym's technology.
Oh, the
he's kind of one of the villains.
I was gonna say I don't really remember his name either because he wasn't that prominent. I mean, he was a prominent character, but he didn't do a lot.
Right.
Yeah,
he's a Hydra guy.
Though. Yeah, the guy that Pym punches in the beginning.
Yeah. That whole scene was just fun. It was neat. It was a neat establishing scene.
Yeah, I liked how it already sowed the distaste that Pym has for
the Starks.
Starks,
the S.H.I.E.L.D.,
the Avengers eventually, you know, when that conversation comes up later in the movie.
Yeah.
Because for all the work that Pym is going through to keep his technology out of evil hands and whatnot, there's that part where Scott Lang is just like, well, we need to call the Avengers. And Pym's like, nope, I am not. I have worked my entire life to keep this stuff away from Starks.
Yeah.
I'm not about to call one now.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Well, I like that. That's one of my notes. I like that they, because he says when they're talking about that, he's like, this isn't some cute tech like the Iron Man suit.
Yes.
You know, and he's like, this could change the face of the world. And I like thinking about it that way, you know, like, because he's talking about like the quantum realm and, you know, if all of a sudden we can just shrink or enlarge anything we want, you know,
Well, I mean, you could feed the planet with that technology alone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's not quite just a defense mechanism.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
It really could be.
Yep. So I like that they mentioned, I like that they put that kind of stakes behind it.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't like, it's just like, oh, it's another suit. And they even mentioned that because when they are having, when Cross is like showing the yellow jacket suit, that one guy's like, you know, like, and he's gives his whole presentation, and that one guy's like, so it's a suit. So I kind of like, I liked that they kind of bridged that and put it in perspective.
Yeah. I like the Cross character also.
I thought he was. Go ahead.
Sorry. I like the relationship he had with Pym a lot.
Yeah,
I like how they worked that. As crazy as he was, especially, you know, it's one of those things that kind of build to, and then they give you that line towards the end again when they're talking, and because all he wants is Hank Pym's respect,
right?
Yeah,
you know, for all his evil plotting and, you know, wanting to figure out the technology. You know, he's going to sell it. He's going to make his millions or whatever. He's already sitting on a pile of money. He's doing this as a get back at you for shunning me to Hank Pym. Like, that's really his kind of unspoken motivation. And I like the point where they get to that and he's basically telling Hank, you know, like, you know, why in the world did you pick me in the first place? And Hank's like, I saw a lot of me in you.
Yeah.
He's like, well, why'd you shun me then? Because I saw too much of me.
Yeah.
It's a great line.
Yeah.
What I didn't like, I liked the Cross character. What I didn't like was when he became Yellow Jacket.
Okay.
I felt like that didn't fit. I don't know. I just didn't feel like all of a sudden he should be this big threat. You know, I almost feel like he should have had a bodyguard or, you know, somebody who is like a threatening person to jump in the suit and have the fight with Iron Man rather than just like, oh, he's this scientist executive that's now, you know what, I don't know, it just felt like
crazy gonna crazy,
I guess, you know.
Yeah, they kept talking about how like the technology was changing the chemistry of his brain, which was making him not think clearly and stuff.
That was rushed.
Yeah,
you know,
it was weird because they just kind of threw it out there once randomly earlier on, because he mentioned that the thing that Cross didn't have was that helmet.
Mm-hmm.
The helmet is what protects the brain from the particles doing some sort of rearranging of the chemistry. And then later on, they randomly throw that back up because, like, they're in that, they're in the room and he pulls the gun. And that's when Hope just says, "Oh, stop, you're not thinking straight. The particle's messing with your brain." And then he does, like, that fake cry.
Yeah.
He's like, "Oh, you're totally right." And then he just goes and tries to kill the guy anyway. Like, it did. It felt weird. Yeah. Like, it did, it felt like it was, like, a thing that didn't need to be a thing. But
well, and he hadn't been shrinking yet, right? Like, he didn't even...
That's what threw me about it.
Because they were saying that about him before he had even shrunk the goat, right?
Right, yes.
So, like, he wasn't, like, it's not like he was shrinking in a bunch. He just was working on it.
I mean, that's the thing. He didn't get that tech to work until right up until the grand finale at the end there.
Right,
yeah.
Like, he had, everything he had zapped with his particle had turned into slime all the way up until right before they got into the big fight at the end. So, it's like, did he even know that that suit was going to work when he put it on? Like, that's,
I do like when they brought that goat out and they were going to test it, and Hope said something about,
I thought you said you were going to use mice.
Yeah, he's like, "What's the difference?"
Right.
Because I was sitting there watching that going, "What is the difference?" Like, am I supposed to think he's more evil than that?
Right.
I'll back him on that one.
Yeah.
But it was so cute. They made sure to show you how cute the goat was.
Well, some people can consider mice cute, too.
That's true. That's
so
true.
So also, if you have a gun that just can turn people to a little spot of goo,
you know
what Hydra and the government are going to be real interested in?
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, that plays back. His point was, and I need to make a truckload of money. He had a truckload of money.
Yes.
You know, Hank Pym could shrink a guy into something that wasn't goo.
Yeah.
And he had to figure that out.
I get that.
Yeah.
I just was saying.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I'd have sold them both first.
Yeah. This weapon doesn't work. I think it works.
Yeah.
That part was pretty messed up, though, when he shrunk the one guy into the goo in the bathroom.
Yep.
It's gross because just like him. He zaps that dude and he turns into like a bubbling little pile of goo and he just like wipes him up with that tissue and throws him in the toilet. Like, chunks of them are still on the floor.
Yeah.
Ugh. This is gross.
Can you DNA test?
Yeah,
shrink.
I know, right?
Shrinked goo.
I don't know.
I'm no scientist, Jaren. I'm not sure.
I don't want to get too into the weeds.
I guess we should talk about Scott a little bit. We haven't brought up Scott.
We could set him up, I guess. What was the story about how he went to jail in the first place? I always hear it and smile and then immediately forget the details. But he basically got fired and then embezzled.
Well, he found out he was
a whistleblower, right?
Yeah, he was working for some company that found out they were overcharging their customers and then pocketing that money. And
so he worked for Wells Fargo.
Okay.
There you go.
and he was a whistleblower. He brought it up, and they fired him. So then he computer hacked them and went to prison for it.
Yeah, he stole all the money and gave it to all the customers.
Yeah, basically. Okay. That, and that's what he basically
robbed. He's Robin Hood. He Robin Hooded them.
And then he stole the guy's car and drove it into a pool. Right?
That was like the last part at the end that he was like not proud of or whatever. Like, Luis brought that up and he looked like he was mad that he brought it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is funny, but like, because the new husband of his ex-wife that just seems to hate him.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't seem like that's the type of criminal. I mean, it's not like he was out there doing anything hard crime wise or anything like that. You know, that seems like something.
Well, you know, I think that they're. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, go ahead. I mean, that was basically my point.
Yeah, okay. And that's one of the things I noticed is that while they are, like, they're real hard on him for being a criminal, but they're never, like, real spiteful about it. You know what I mean? And I think that kind of plays into that, you know, that he's not, like, a hardened criminal where they're, like, afraid of him and think he's evil. They just think he's kind of a moron and makes terrible decisions, so they want him to make good decisions.
They also make sure to bring up the whole, like, you haven't paid any child support. Yeah, remember, like, they bring all that stuff up, too. Yeah. So that probably plays into it.
Which, you know, he's been in prison the entire time.
Right. You know? But maybe he wasn't paying any child support before prison.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
I sort of thought they broke up because of that. But I don't know.
Yeah, they don't really...
They don't go into that. And it was
one of the DVD extras, the court documents from the divorce proceedings.
We need to find out. We need to figure out how this divorce went down.
Well, and that was one of the things that I kind of, I don't know, like I liked that they were never like super, you know, antagonistic with him and like hated him, but it also seemed like they were being pretty petty because they didn't, you know, I mean, they were doing all right.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't need his child support. They just wanted him to be paying it.
Right.
You know, and to take away visitation, you know, like, get an apartment, get a job, pay child support. Like, you know, well, okay, how much? Because, like, really, they could try to make him pay all back child support. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What are we doing here? You know, it kind of made them seem petty to me.
Yeah, it was, I didn't know where that line was. Mm-hmm. And exactly, I mean, petty's the right word, I think, using that. Because, like, they didn't. I mean, he wasn't a hardened criminal. It seemed like they were a little too mad at him for what he did one of those things where you go to jail for it.
Right.
And that's fine.
Yep.
But he also had a side to that story.
Right.
So you'd think the mother of his daughter would at least be cognizant of that, you know?
Yeah, especially since the daughter, like, really liked him.
Exactly.
And he's, you know.
And that's the thing. Like, he was a guy who seemed like a pretty good guy trying to be a pretty good dad.
Right.
That's not something you just turn away because the child support is back. Now, you know, there's a lot of reasons that there's things maybe we, you know, weren't written into the script. Maybe, you know, who knows? But none of that plays through, so that makes it play kind of awkward. You know? There's plenty of deadbeats out there.
Yes.
Get this kind of treatment. He didn't feel like
and
he
deserve
was,
it.
Yeah. He didn't feel like he was that at all. He was just sort of getting it.
Yeah.
And so it played kind of awkward because they tried too hard to make that side of their feeling, of the family's feelings, make sense while never letting Scott not be a good guy. You know,
right.
Like he was the best of guys.
Yep.
But also, these other good people seem to kind of hate him, sort of, for no particular reason that makes a ton of sense. It's just awkward.
Yep. Yeah. And maybe that's what they're going for because that situation can be awkward.
Yeah,
you know what
fair.
I mean? So, yeah. I don't know. Just it's weird. It's awkward.
Yeah. So I did like when he showed up at that party and they basically said something about you know, him not being invited and
right.
they have to play against each other with the kids standing there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know what time it started. You weren't invited.
Yeah.
Mommy was so excited she spit her coffee out.
Yeah. So I like he gets that job at Baskin Robbins to get back into society.
Yep.
And then immediately gets fired because they find out about his criminal background, which is ridiculous.
Yeah,
Baskin Robbins always finds out.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that's how that goes, though, man.
Hey, and that's something I want to take a second. Not that I think it makes this a bad movie or an insensitive movie, but like that's a real problem with ex-cons trying to find work, trying to reassimilate to society, not being able to, and then going back to the life because they're not able to.
Yeah.
I guess a real problem, and I don't feel like... I feel like it gets played almost heroically in a lot of movies, and I don't like that.
Yeah. I see that. I can see that.
Yeah.
I thought it played fine here for the simple fact that, I mean, they didn't make it more of a joke than the rest of the movie was. It was a legitimate issue that he was going through at the beginning of this that made real world sense, that there were also some jokes around, because there's jokes around literally everything in this movie.
Yeah.
But I get exactly what you're saying also.
Yeah. Like, it just made me think of movies where it's not played for it's just what happens, and it's like, oh, finally, you know.
Yeah.
Like just take the job and make $1 million, like, you know, or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And, so, I just don't appreciate it.
And that's basically what happens here, though.
Yeah.
Well, Luis has got a job for him.
Right.
Hey, and we need to talk about Luis.
Okay, do it. Yeah, talk about Luis.
Yeah. Talk about the runaway sleeper hit from this movie. man, Michael Peña's great.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
Yeah,
I mean, if you can't find any other redeeming qualities in this movie, you got to at least be able to go to his scenes and just smile.
Yeah.
Nonstop. And every time they go into that, I remember the first time seeing it in theaters, and the first time he went through that you know, the story of how he found out about the thing, and he's just they're playing all the scenes over him telling the story, and the people in the scenes are mouthing, you know, but it's always his voice going, and it is so good.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've seen a lot of calls for the need for a recap of everything that's happened up through going into Endgame and the entire Marvel Universe, but they need to have Luis tell the story of it. I don't know how they'd release that. I don't know if that'd be a DVD extra or just a YouTube promotion or what it would be.
I feel like that can be in the movie.
Oh, you want that to start Endgame?
Yeah.
It feels a tonal shift of sorts for what we're probably going to get. But who knows?
Luis survived. Did he survive? Did he survive the Thanosing?
We don't know. See, that's what I say. I thought that would have been a great post-credit sequence for Ant-Man or for Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Like that, you know? Yeah. But again, I mean, they throw a 5-minute video together and pop it on YouTube. I'll watch it 100 times.
It could be. It'd be a great in-credit scene for Endgame.
Oh,
him recapping the whole thing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Oh, my God. That'd be amazing. Yeah. Could you imagine him talking Thanos' parts, but like with his voice coming out of Thanos' mouth?
I can't now.
Thanos is like, oh, snap. Everybody dead.
Oh, my God. This needs to happen.
We just find out Luis was a watcher the whole time.
Yes.
I'm in the system. I love that part where he's like, are we the good guys now? We're the good guys. This was weird.
Yeah. That whole band, like, I love that whole, what do you call them?
Crew?
Band of Outlaws.
Crew.
I don't know.
Yeah,
crew.
There we go. That'll work.
Not a lot of our fans are going to get this, but you guys will.
Okay.
I just had, like, wrestler training flashbacks when Luis was like, so I had an idea, like for this tactic, like I was thinking when I got in there, I was gonna whistle.
Oh my God.
I've had so many conversations with wrestling trainees that go that way where they're like, hey man, I need to talk to you about this idea.
I got this idea for this gimmick.
Yeah, I was gonna do this. I was thinking about doing this thing, and like I was gonna like when I step through the ropes, I was gonna move my foot like I was gonna cock my foot like this before I step down.
Go on.
Yeah. No, that's just it.
What do you think?
Yeah. I've had that conversation. when he said that, he was like, I got this idea for this tactic. I was thinking, like, when I get in there, I could whistle, you know, like.
And then they're like, no, do not whistle. Yeah. And then he does.
Yeah.
He's like walking down the halls whistling, It's a Small World.
Scott says, this is Andy Griffith.
Yeah. Do not whistle.
I remember just how excited I was when Paul Rudd got cast for this, because just the idea of him eventually playing off of Robert Downey Jr. was really enthralling to me, and that was before I even saw the Scott Lang character or anything that. And I think as far as performance goes, I don't think I could have asked for much more. I mean, he's Paul Rudd in a superhero movie. You know, this was I Love You, Man with a suit.
I totally dig it too.
Yeah,
I love Paul Rudd. I'm super into it.
And again, it's a smaller thing. I'm not saying Paul Rudd should have been the, you know, Captain America ever or anything like that. But working in this realm of the universe, the great thing about a giant franchise of 22 movies is you can do different things.
Yeah.
Now, the vast majority of these are big superhero epics, but it's nice that every once in a while you get that sort of, you know, different take here. And so I really enjoyed the fact that we just got all these brand new characters. Nothing was taking itself too seriously. You got your Paul Rudd. You got your Luis. You had Michael Douglas having a great time.
Yeah.
You know, and playing straight into it. Evangeline Lilly is a great job. There's just a lot going into this. I mean, there's some nitpicky things and some things that play pretty weird. But overall, I was really happy with everything that came together as far as that stuff goes. And the casting really drove a ton of it.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
And I really like the band of that crew.
The crew.
Yeah.
The
yeah,
crew.
Like those guys were every time they had something to say, it was funny.
Yeah.
You know?
I enjoyed them too. So let's talk about the powers a little bit, the suit and everything. Okay. We haven't really talked about that too much. The controlling the ants thing. So, like, I didn't know a whole lot about Ant-Man, to be honest, from the books. Like, I knew he's Hank Pym. I knew of Ant-Man and the Wasp, you know, but he's another one of those characters I didn't follow too closely in the comics. So I never really knew about how his shrinking and growing powers correlated with also being able to control ants.
Yeah.
So it was kind of cool to get the logic in this movie of why he does that sort of thing. Like, they had the little earpiece where it's basically a brainwave thing, and he just controls the ants with his brainwaves.
I like how they made it difficult, too.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't just put the thing on and know how to do everything.
Yeah.
Like, he really had to learn it.
Yeah. But I don't know. I thought the ant stuff was kind of fun. And then, you know, when we get... He names the one Antony. I like, because early on, when he first flies on it, it's just a number. And he's,
which I thought was funny, too. He's like, you know, like, they don't have names. They have numbers. You know how many of these things there are? And I started going, numbers would be just as confusing, if not more so.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. But then, so he names it Antony, and we get attached to it. And then it dies later.
See, I didn't get attached to it. That was one of my notes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I, you know, when they killed the Iron Man robots in Iron Man 3, I was like, there's a moment, you know, they gave him that little sad scene right before they fell into the ocean.
The
and I was like,
rings.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, no.
No.
Oh, man, when he shot Antony, I was just like, meh. You know, and they play it because he's like, you know, like he plays, he's like, Antony.
You know, and you know why? Because it's an ant, it's a mouse, it's a goat, doesn't matter.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, but I did not. Even when they showed, like, the sad little one wing,
the wing
swizzling,
just falling down.
Yeah, I was like, whatever, it's an ant, man.
It's an ant, man.
Yeah, it's an ant. It's an ant. Whatever.
Not as attached.
You're already on another one.
Yeah.
were you more attached to the ant from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
Man.
You remember? They had an ant friend too.
Yeah. died fighting that scorpion? Didn't the scorpion
like
kill
that.
It?
It's been a long time since I've seen that.
Yeah,
movie.
You know, my kids have been watching it, but I have
really?
Not been there when they have been.
Oh, wow. So. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen that.
Speaking of your kids, any of your kids scared of the ants?
Uh-uh.
Nope.
No. I heard that complain a lot when it came out.
Really?
Not so. Never from anybody with kids. It was like, oh, my kid was scared of the ants. Only from adults going, oh, I don't know. Those ants are pretty scary. I don't know if I'm going to take my kids to.
Really?
Yeah. Like I heard that more than once. Yeah.
Spencer kept
like,
going.
Really?
Spencer,
I think these are people who forgot, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah. Really.
Well,
yeah.
I think these are people. I was like, really, your kid? You give your kid participation trophies, huh?
Yeah. 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 Lady, your kid's going to have problems.
Right.
Spencer kept going, they think he's like a dog. That's what Spencer kept doing. He thought it was
I remember this came out not long after we first started taking my oldest two movies, I think. And it was one of, it was Guardians was right before this. What was right before Guardians? It was Winter Soldier. So I think it was one of the first like Marvel movies that came out that I thought she could potentially care about because I knew it would be more lighthearted and stuff like that, and I was really excited about it. And I promised my wife I'd go see it before I let her see it just to make sure. And I went and saw it. I was like, there's a few words she shouldn't repeat, but nothing big. Yeah. I'm gonna you know go
like that.
Yeah,
yeah. But I went and then I went and told her I was like, hey, there's this new Ant-Man movie. It's about superheroes. You want to go see it? All excited, and she just goes, "Meh, no." I'm like, "What? Like, you? Why don't you want to go see it? That's a big kid movie," and just like left. I'm like, "Oh, well,
it's a big kid movie."
I've been really pumped about this for like 3 months, but I guess we just won't go. And we didn't. We never ended up going to see it at that run. Now That's they have funny. Seen it since. I went through all of them with them last, and they did like it.
Yeah.
By the time we actually watched it, two of them were old enough to watch it.
Oh, nice.
And so they enjoyed themselves through it and everything like that. But that was a bummer.
Oh, man. Spencer really liked it too, but he really got into it. He loved the fight stuff at the end. He was thrilled to see Thomas the Train
yes.
in the movie.
Yes.
And he thought it was so funny.
Yep.
Like, I all love of the Thomas stuff, scene. He was cracking up. Like, it was the funniest. I was like, yeah. I was amused by how much he was enjoying all of the stuff, like the Thomas Train falling off the tracks, and then like when it grew big, he was like, "The Thomas Train's so big now!" Like, that stuff was really fun to watch yeah. him like get excited about.
A lot of the shrinking and growing stuff, got me fine. Like, it.
Yeah,
I saw the tank coming a mile away.
Oh yeah, me too.
Like, as soon as they showed that thing, I was like, "Well, that's gonna be a real tank."
That's
eventually.
A real
tank, but it was still awesome.
I love that it still had a keychain attached yes, to it when it grew.
Yep. And then when it got to that final fight, and I remember that from the promotional stuff coming up too, because they made a big deal in the commercials about, you know, them fighting on that Thomas, like they were fighting on a train, and then it zooms out and it's there. And that's one of those jokes where I saw the trailer and I'm like, that's hilarious, but I think they just kind of killed it there.
Yeah.
And then I watched it in the movie and went, well, I still dig it.
So, yeah.
It's so great, good. Dude, because he's like, no! The train's coming at him, and then it zooms out and you just see it go,
just fall off.
It's amazing.
Gag.
Yeah, it is a good gag.
No, the whole in fight is a good gag.
Yeah. It really is. It really is.
They set up a lot of stuff with the between Pym and his daughter Hope,
mm-hmm.
and leading into the Wasp stuff, which
they
I
do.
Thought was neat.
Yep.
It was a good again, as lighthearted as this movie was, you didn't think there'd be room for a ton of foreshadowing,
right?
But they did, you
yeah.
know. And now, sitting where we are now, we know that a lot of it has played out,
right,
to a certain degree. But I liked what they did with that, to the strained relationship
mm-hmm.
that they had throughout that, and then the big reveal about the mother. I think it was funny now because I was watching the scene when they did the flashback to what happened to the Wasp in
yep.
this movie. All I could see was Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
But I thought it was, like, in my head, it was just Michelle Pfeiffer. And
right.
then I actually watched the scene and I'm like, oh yeah, they didn't have Michelle Pfeiffer yet. So they just never took the mask
right.
off or
yeah.
anything like that.
Yeah.
But I like the storyline around that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We totally got to talk about the scene too, where he goes to the new Avengers compound.
Yes.
Because like part of their plan for the end is that he's got to go steal this thing from an old Stark warehouse,
yep.
which turns out to be where the Avengers are
yep.
now stationed.
Yep. Which
I love that whole scene.
Which was great too, because it literally just happened in the movie before.
Yeah, yeah.
Is when the Avengers moved out there, so there's no way they would have known.
Right.
You know?
Well, because I love how he's coming in, he's flying in or whatever, and he's like, I thought you said this was an old abandoned warehouse.
Yeah.
And like, it's got the Avengers A painted on
yeah.
the top or whatever. And then they immediately go, abort mission, abort
yeah.
mission.
He's like, nope, I can do it.
Yep. I can do it.
Paul Rudd is so endearing every time he meets someone
yeah.
in these movies.
Yeah.
Like, he's just such a fanboy.
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's sort of one of those audience surrogate things.
Yeah.
Like, even with just Falcon, that moment was so cool when he was just like, hey, you're awesome, and you know, I'm sorry about, you know, this, but I need to borrow this thing so I can save the world.
Yeah. yeah. You know how that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Big fan.
Yeah, that was just a fun little extra fight scene we got mm-hmm. in the middle there too. I like how it was just Falcon was just holding things down by himself, where everybody else was out doing something.
Yeah.
I guess.
And, you know, it's another one of those things that we talk about regularly through all these movies, is just how much fun the world building part is.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
before this, like, this is the mainstay now.
Right.
But if you flash back 10 years ago, before this was a thing, how many times did you see a moment in a property where you went, you know, I wish they would have just used this other thing. It would have been a neat little crossover moment.
Yeah,
it wouldn't
totally.
Have hurt anything.
Yeah.
It would have added some cool stuff. But you just never see stuff like that. And
yeah.
now, I mean, boom, there it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
And what a great use for Anthony Mackie and Falcon. He's a guy who is an important part of these movies, but not a huge part of these
mm-hmm.
movies. You know, he gets plenty of films that he shows up in, but he's never the focal point of it.
Yeah.
You know, there are no Falcon movies.
Right.
You know, he's a supporting character, so why not let him support other projects as well?
Yeah.
And dropping him into a movie like this was absolutely just like the little perfect cherry on top to really kind of bring the whole thing together as far as extending it out into the Marvel Universe.
Well, and I like, too, because it ties into
yeah,
the next
exactly.
movie. Like, there's actual, like, repercussions from this whole meeting right
yep.
here. You know what I mean? Like, it moves the story forward a little bit. It's pretty cool. The quantum realm kind of becomes like this, something they talk about a whole bunch in this, and that obviously becomes a bigger thing later mm-hmm. on too. But this is also kind of our first glimpse into these alternate realms and stuff too, right? Which is starting to get into some Doctor Strange territory.
Yes. Yep.
So that's kind of cool. Starting to, like, when we were watching Guardians of the Galaxy, we talked about how that was kind of our expanse out into the galactic stuff. And now this movie's starting to give us the expansion into the different realms.
Yep.
So that's kind of neat seeing that brought into the
movie. And we're still in a phase right now where we don't know how big of a deal this is. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because we still don't even know, looking forward to Ant-Man and Wasp, we know that he goes into the Quantum Realm on purpose. We have no idea how he got out of it still.
Yeah, exactly.
Going into Endgame. Yeah. So that's going to be...
And there's been a lot of speculation as far as, like, you know, time travel through the Quantum Realm.
Right.
It is a source of, you know, Strange's powers. And we don't know how that ties together with any of this stuff. So there's just a lot of unknowns, but this is our first glimpse of where that came from.
Yeah.
Comes from?
Comes from. Definitely. It's where it came from.
I do words good.
Yeah. Anything else on your note sheet that you want to bring up?
Man, a lot.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I'm just going to start running through my notes. I'll skip the stuff we've already talked about. We actually talked about a bunch of it.
No, let's do it again.
Nope.
Ant-Man episode, longest episode.
When Scott gets the suit. I like that he, you know, they kind of reference him being like an electrical engineer.
Yeah.
And then they show him actually doing like a little research on the suit before he just jumps in.
Where he's kind of like tinkering with it and stuff. Yep. Yeah, that's cool.
I liked that little bit. I did not, was there like a disco in the apartment beneath them? You know, like talk about the, or did he time travel through the quantum realm without knowing it? Because like all of a sudden there's, you know, those big platform, like clear platform heels
and
a record player downstairs. And I don't know, that was like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And then he rolls right out of that and he falls on that cab that Garrett Morris is driving.
Yeah. Which was awesome.
Yeah.
You know why Garrett Morris was driving that cab?
Because he's fallen on hard times?
Didn't he play Ant-Man in that Saturday Night Live skit?
He played Ant-Man in a Saturday Night Live skit.
Goodness, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I am so unbelievably happy right now, and I can't wait to finish this episode and get to YouTube.
It was, so it's Margo, it's Margo Kidder was the host.
Okay.
And the Bill Murray was Superman, and they had gotten married and settled down, and they're having like a house party where a bunch of superheroes start showing up.
That's awesome.
And, Garrett Morris is Ant-Man.
It just reminded me of the Saturday Night Live Death of Superman sketch where Sinbad showed up as Black Lightning, and nobody knew who he was. And now he's got his own show.
Yeah, I know, right?
Black Lightning, not Sinbad.
Not Sinbad. He's in Jingle All the Way, though, so it's okay.
He had his own show for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So when he gets arrested... After he brings the stuff back and the daughter has Scott Lang arrested, he goes to jail and Hank Pym breaks him out of jail.
Oh, yeah.
There's like, they're acting like there's a big urgency, like once he shrinks down and goes outside, they're like, you gotta hurry, you gotta get out of there now. Like the cops are gonna run out and find him and the ants. You know? I thought that was silly. Like, you know, they're like, you gotta hurry, we only got so long, you know, so long to get you out of there. And, you know, the cops are like running out the door. I'm like, who's gonna... Oh, look, there he is. Why is there ants out here? Oh, Scott, gotcha.
Man, they did frame that like this big chase scene.
Yeah.
And now I can't figure out why. Because you're right, he hits that button and then he's got all the time in the world, right?
Right, yeah. Yep. Talked about that. Oh, when she punches him in the face.
Oh,
and he's
yes.
like, were you even going for the hand?
Yeah.
I talked about that. I liked when they did, when he was first showing the crew the suit, and you know, of course, Luis is like, daddy doesn't get scared. Right. And normally, you know, like they play that joke right away where it's like, you know, daddy doesn't get scared, and then something crazy happens. He gets scared right away.
Yeah.
And something crazy happened because he shrinks.
Yeah.
But, you know, like they gave Luis a minute before he like freaked out, you know, because he was just like, oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, he had to actually see him.
Yeah. Right. You know. Yeah.
They were like, some David Copperfield. Right?
Yeah. I was going to say, those guys, like the Russian guy in particular, had a few really funny lines. I think it was somewhere around here, too, and I just cannot remember them. But that's why I keep talking about how much I liked those guys, and then I'm totally blanking on their funny moments, but they had a few.
Yeah, well, they were funny, they weren't super memorable.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes they were, like, funny, really funny in context, more so than they were, like, quotable lines or anything like that. So, I get that. Although they are my next thing here. 'Cause, like, those cops, like, find them and pull them out of the van, right? So they steal the car. 'Cause, well, first of all, why are the cops trying to arrest Hank Pym? Did I miss that?
I think they identified him as the lawyer.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, that's right. Yeah. Well, so the cops roll up to get him, and so T.I. runs out and steals their car, so they'll chase him and leave Hank alone.
Yeah.
And then he chases them and ditches their car, like, a block away, you know, right? And then he runs back to the van and honks the horn, and they catch him. They come and pull him out of the van. Well, like, so then a bunch of stuff happens, and then they cut back to them because they pull the fire alarm inside.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I mean, there's been a solid 20 minutes, you know, happening inside before they pull the alarm, and then they cut back, and, like, they still haven't cuffed or arrested these guys. Like you know, they just, like they have them held down, but then they just get up to run away, they get up to go check the fire alarm.
Yeah.
And those guys aren't cuffed or anything, they just get up and leave. Like, how long does it take to cuff and arrest a couple idiots, you know? Like, what are we doing here, guys? And then my last thing, last note that we haven't already covered, man, I do not want to be Ant-Man. He is the runnest hero.
Oh, man.
Like, man, he runs. He has to run a marathon every time he wants to throw a punch, and I'm not into that.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Sir.
Yep.
So that's,
you know, when you're small, you have a lot further to go, right?
Yeah. I am out on being Ant-Man.
Yeah. There's a which we'll talk about in great depth very soon here, I'm sure. There's a part in Civil War where he's just running across, like, a little, like, the stairs for an airplane or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like a 3 minute.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Cool.
I did like the effects on the fight sequences and stuff like that. I don't know, from a physics perspective, I don't know how well they work.
Right.
But the shrinking,
mm-hmm,
and the growing and the, you know, whacking people around and popping back up, like, that it was very enthralling from a visual perspective.
Yeah.
I did not know going in how cinematic Ant-Man was going to be.
Right.
Yeah. Because
that's one of those things where I'm like, yeah, dumb hero, but I like all these movies, so I'll go see it. But then you watch it, and you're like, oh, I can get into all this.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I think that, does that do it?
Does that wrap it up?
I think that wraps up Ant-Man. Yeah, we get that. You talked about the note sheet. You talked about the foreshadowing with Wasp, and they kind of gave us that little teaser with the post or the mid-credits scene.
Yep.
We actually got to see the Wasp costume and everything for Hope, so that's pretty cool. And then the final after-credit scene leads right into Civil War. It's actually like a scene from Civil War that they just stuck at the end of the credits. Yeah. So,
which, I mean, we're in a realm where we're in one of those right now, because we've got that from Captain Marvel going into Endgame. Every time I go back, like, those, I feel like those shouldn't play as well in retrospect. Those are fun when you watch them, but once you see the next movie, they shouldn't matter anymore. But just about every time I can remember going back and watching one of those, like, I've seen Civil War 15 times.
Yeah.
And watching that post-credit sequence again, I was still like, ooh, I get to watch Civil War now.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I still get the effect.
Yeah.
I'll say the only time that's happened to me was, like we talked about, when they did the Avengers commercial.
Like, where it was a trailer, basically.
Yeah, when it was like a trailer. That was the only time that worked. Like,
amped us up again like it was coming brand new.
Yep. like it didn't do anything for me this time, and a couple others have just been like scenes from a movie.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Well, that's going to put a cap on Ant-Man. So that means coming up next is Captain America Civil War, kicking off Phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So definitely stay tuned for that. We're
in the end game now.
We are totally in the end game now. We are building up. We do not have much left. We've got a month until this movie comes out and a month to finish up the rest of the MCU movies until then, and we definitely will. So make sure you guys are subscribed however you listen to your podcasts. If you're on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. If you're on iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher or Podbean, follow us, rate and review us, do all that good stuff. And that way we can make sure that the podcast gets out there.
Oh, do you have a... I don't want to put you on the spot. Do you have a rating for this movie?
Oh.
Oh. No.
Uh-oh.
It gets 3 out of 5 ants.
3 out of 5 ants.
Don't we gotta rate them?
Oh, we do. It is the end of the phase.
Oh, my gosh. I am not prepared for this.
Wow. Well, it's got... Oh, man. That's got to... Should we begin phase 3 with rating them?
We can do that.
All right. Let's do that. Let's come back and do that. That way...
Otherwise, this episode's going to end with 6 minutes of dead air.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, Marvel good yay.
The Geek Easy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of the Geek Easy Podcast.